Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Hello and good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with me this morning, and I'm glad to be with you, actually. I was traveling last week. I was in the Connecticut, Hartford area. So to all of the listeners at 94.1 FM in Hartford, thank you so much for listening and being a part of the Faith Radio family. We love you, and it's just great to be with you. And a special welcome to everyone else in the listening network, 89.1 FM in Bismarck. Good morning to you, and 93.1 in Waterloo, 104.7 in Madison, and here at 90.7 and 97.5 here in the Twin Cities. And of course, you can always stream online. A lot of people do that, and that's kind of an easy way to hear the show and nice crystal clarity wherever you are. So today is, believe it or not, already May 15th. Half of the month is already behind us, and lots of graduations coming up, and what are you going to do for graduation, and what are kids going to do when they get out of school, and then the fall is going to bring the next chapter of their life. How exciting. We're interested to hear what some of those chapters are going to be. So in the next week, we're going to start finding stories of people and what their plans are and what the Lord has laid on their heart for them to do, because God calls us in to just to send us out. And in John 16:33, it says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. There is lots of trouble in the world, and we're not hyperventilating around here at Faith Radio. We're just going to report the news as it comes, and we know God's in control and is sovereign, and we're not going to budge. That's the plan around here. In 1905, the city of Las Vegas was founded on this day, as well as the all-you-can-eat $3.95 buffet. That's where that started. And I'm going to talk to Rob Bluey. He's already on our studio line, so I don't want to waste any more time. I'm going to ask him about what's going on in Jerusalem and many other news stories that Rob will shine the light on. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back with Rob Bluey. All right, it's 8 minutes after the hour. Rob Bluey is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal and a regular guest, one of my faves. And he is on our studio line right now. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
I'm so glad to be talking to you this morning. And it's exciting to think that what's happening in Jerusalem going on right now. I would love for you to explain to our listeners as clear as you can why this the U.S. Embassy move to Jerusalem is so important to Christians. And if you do that, I'm going to send you a gift card to your favorite overpriced corporate coffee shop.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Bill.
It won't have a lot on it, but it'll be something.
Thank you. Well, certainly a day of both joy, as you indicated, but then also a lot of tension. 58 people lost their lives in protest. Mostly in the Gaza area. But let's go back to the heart of your question. I think it's important to begin by noting that Israel is the only country where it didn't have the embassy in its capital.
Mm-hmm.
This was an action that the United States had taken years and years ago, was tried to be corrected by Congress in 1995 when they passed a law that told the president to move the embassy to the capital of Jerusalem. President Clinton and then President Bush and then finally President Obama decided to take a waiver and basically not make that move. It wasn't until Donald Trump was campaigning for president and then effectively had the office where he decided to do this. Why is it important? Well, first of all, it's really important to one of our strongest allies, which is Israel, which wants the capital there in Jerusalem. And I think it's important because it recognizes that like any other country, they have the right to determine what their capital is. It's important for Christians, given the holiness of that city and the important role it's played throughout throughout time.
Mm-hmm. So, Rob, who opposes this and why?
Well, it's opposed, obviously, by the Palestinians, who say that this is not going to lead to any productive peace talks. We haven't seen, frankly, much progress taking place there anyways, and it was unclear if President Trump did not make the move that this would suddenly spark a peace process. Now, I think the Trump administration, to their credit, has said that that's still their goal. And so, yes, there were protests yesterday. They turned deadly, unfortunately. But that's one of the strongest groups opposing. And, of course, I think here and domestically, I mean, it's one of those issues where you have Republicans and Democrats lining up on each side of it, even though it did pass Congress in 1995. That seems like it really was a generation ago. Think about how different the political dynamic was in 1995 than it is today, when it seems that anything Donald Trump does is bound to generate criticism.
Mm-hmm. So, Rob, the violent protests that are going on, how long will this last? Probably a long time?
Probably. I mean, obviously, yesterday being the dedication ceremony where you had the United States sending a delegation there, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, several U.S. senators, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Obviously, this was a moment in time when I think it was probably the most intense. But yes, I would expect the protest to continue. But frankly, this is not a decision that I think the United States is going to back away from.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to. Yesterday was kind of the beginning. Now they actually need to build an embassy, and it's going to be the first step. One of the things that I think everybody who wants to see this crisis resolved but recognizes that this is, you know, decades long, there still is an opportunity for peace, but it requires the Palestinians to come to the table and not engage in the violence that we saw yesterday.
Mm. Rob, you are getting that coffee card that's going to be sent today.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure to share it with my wife.
You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. I'm going to get your email address and send that to you. All right, let's have a conversation a little bit about Donald Trump and Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. They got into a heated argument about immigration. And what went on in that conversation?
Yes, well, we have seen a surge along the U.S.-Mexico border recently.
Yeah, what's with that?
I think we've talked about this in the past. I mean, it's not unusual to have this time of year a surge of illegal immigrants. And frankly, we had this very newsworthy caravan that was making its way from Central America through Mexico, which generated a lot of headlines and a lot of attention. And as we know, there's probably no issue that animates President Trump more than the border and illegal immigration.
Right.
And the fact that we've had this surge, he doesn't have the wall in place, where at least to the stage that he'd like it, and he hasn't been able to crack down, I think, as effectively on some of the other bad actors who are bringing drugs and other bad things to the United States. I think tensions probably just boiled over. President Trump is certainly not one to hold back and spoke his mind. And I think that the Homeland Security Secretary, who's responsible for this, really probably bore the brunt of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that there's working within the law, there's only so much that can be done. I mean, it really requires Congress to take some action if they want to change. And we've seen attempts by Congress. There's a movement afoot now by some centrist Republicans to pass a DREAM Act, which I think personally is probably not the direction that the Congress should go. But let's face it, there is a lot of frustration on this issue, and so it's not surprising to see some tensions raised last week.
Mm-hmm. What exactly was the point that Nielsen was making? I saw in an article that she kind of stated very obviously, and she said this should be obvious to all. If you try to enter the country without authorization, you have broken the law.
Exactly. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions has made a similar point. She said, to quote her directly, she said, "It is our policy that anyone crossing the border illegally will be detained and referred for prosecution. We will no longer exempt classes or groups of individuals from prosecution." I mean, sending a clear message there. And again, that's why I don't think that there's any single person who you can probably point a finger at. I mean, this is a problem, again, years in the making. We had the opportunity to address it. I think President Obama made it worse when he took executive action going around Congress, and now we find ourselves in a situation where we have people here who are living here with a status that's really uncertain, and you have a president who wants to pursue a tough policy that's angering, you know, that community and Democrats in Congress who are unwilling to come to the table and try to reach a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Rob, talk a little bit about the GOP lawmakers trying to use this tactic to get a vote on the amnesty bill, and explain what that tactic is.
This is really interesting. It is it's called a discharge petition. A discharge petition has the authority basically to force the leadership of both the Senate and the House to bring a bill to the floor. So as we both know, the majority leader of the Senate, the majority leader of the House, both controlled by Republicans, have a lot of control over what goes on to the floor. So it's not like any senator can just come and bring a bill to the floor. They, you know, would obviously need to broker some sort of deal or go through the committee process. But what this does, it bypasses all of that. So there are right now about 19 Republicans who have signed on to this piece of this discharge petition. If they get all of the Democrats to sign on, and they're likely to do so, that leaves them about just seven signatures short of forcing a vote on this. Now, Paul Ryan has spoken out against it. Conservatives don't like it. But what you have is a situation where I think there's so much frustration on the part of Congress not acting that they're trying to go this route to bring up a series of votes. Now, it's anyone's guess as to what could pass because it still would have to go to the Senate and the president would still have to sign it. But it would be an opportunity, I think, for the House to take a vote on something. And I think what concerns conservatives is there might just be enough Republicans and Democrats out there who are willing to support some sort of an amnesty bill.
Interesting. Rob, let me take a little break when I come back. I've got a bunch more questions for you. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. That's the dailysignal.com. We'll be back in just a minute. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I have Rob Bluey on our studio line from the Daily Signal, dailysignal.com. Rob, it seems like, you know, like it or not, there's a whole bunch of Americans nowadays that seem a little bit happy and optimistic. They're making a little bit of money and maybe saving a little on their taxes. They feel safe. You know, they kind of like some of the president's trade policies or are feel encouraged. He's calling for more American jobs and let's bring manufacturing back to the U.S. So it seems like, you know, in middle America, things seem kind of bright. Maybe it's we're not worrying about the Robert Mueller investigation or Stormy Daniels. So let's just talk a little bit about, if you would, President Trump's, you know, his pro-growth policy. Spit it out, Bill. There we go.
Yeah, well, I mean, great lead-in based on the ad just that was just between segments about you know, feeling happier when you're being generous, and I think people have had the opportunity to hopefully be more generous because they have more money in their wallets and their pocketbooks. So no doubt about it. I mean, we have a great situation right now where basically, if you want a job, you can find a job. There are so many jobs available for filling right now that anybody who's able to work should be able to go and find them. I think the biggest challenge is sometimes geographically it poses some hurdles because the jobs might be in Indiana and you might be living in California or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So that continues to be one of the things. But I think a lot does have to do with the president's policies. And we always talk about tax reform, but perhaps today we can start with deregulation. I think that there was so much government interference in the economy during the Obama years that when President Trump took office and he said that we are not going to be creating regulations at the pace that the Obama administration was doing, and if we do create regulations, by the way, we're going to take two off the books. Well, he's exceeded that number. He's actually taken well more regulations off the books. and done so in a way that I don't think it endangers the environment or the workplace or anything like that. I think what he's trying to do, and I was at an event yesterday at the Environmental Protection Agency where they were talking about lean management and how to improve some of the internal performance of the Environmental Protection Agency. And one of the things, Bill, that really surprised me is that in the past it would take sometimes up to 10 years for this government agency to issue a permit for somebody to embark on a project. They have now set a standard of 6 months. They want to get permits in and out the door. Now, sometimes they're going to say no, but they're going to give you a definitive answer within 6 months, so you're not left sitting out there wondering whether or not you can pursue your entrepreneurial venture or whatnot. So I think that's the change that we're seeing, and that's why businesses have responded positively, and ultimately it's benefiting the consumers and the workers.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard the founder of Home Depot say a couple of years ago, he said that I couldn't have opened my chain of stores under the President Obama's regulation and his policies.
And yeah, that's very true. Bernie Marcus, somebody who's been outspoken on that particular topic. And it's one of those things where I think it does bring a lot of uncertainty when the government starts meddling in your affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know what it's going to lead to. So I think that's certainly one thing. This is one of the things, Bill, we love doing. So I'll just put a plug in here for the Daily Signal. If you go to dailysignal.com and you want to share your story, send us an email, letters@dailysignal.com, because we are trying to find those stories, those success stories out there in this country of people who have been able to thrive either because of the tax cuts or because of regulatory changes. So let us know, because that's one of the things that we love doing most is to tell your story. And if you have listeners out there, encourage them to do so.
Okay, Rob, help my smaller than average brain understand this. You know, the Democrats always say, oh, we can't do the tax cuts. We have to, Republicans want to do all these tax cuts. And yet there has been tax cuts, and yet the government has brought in record number of revenue. And the government ran a $214.3 billion surplus in April. So if all these taxes have been cut, why all the revenue and why the surplus?
Well, it really is amazing. I mean, it just goes to show that that those who said the tax cuts would bring nothing but deficits already, a few months in have already been proven wrong. I mean, this was the biggest monthly surplus that we've had. I mean, there were a number of contributing factors. Obviously, tax day was in April. I believe there were the way that the calendar aligned, it also gave an extra week in there or something for collecting the revenue. But the fact of the matter is that we've seen time and time again, when you cut taxes, businesses tend to they're more than happy to pay the tax. And one of the things we did in the past week is we did an interview with Jim Pinkerton, and Jim is somebody who your listeners might remember from Fox News. He's a strong advocate for cutting the corporate tax rate, and he said that there's this thing known as a partnership, and a partnership you pay taxes at a 7% rate, but there's also all these restrictions that come with being in a partnership. But because we were able to cut the corporate tax rate in the United States to 21%, a lot of these businesses that were in partnerships are more than happy to pay the 21% rate, because even though it's more than the 7% rate, because they don't have some of the other restrictions that come along with it. So they're actually paying the government more revenue at the 21% rate because of some of the changes that were made. So we've seen this happen in countries like Ireland. We have a great story on the Daily Signal today about Ireland and the success it had. So I think we're going to continue to see more of these types of stories, Bill, and it's truly incredible that the government is actually bringing in more revenue after cutting taxes.
Yeah. Another thing President Trump seems to be doing is he's continually adding new names to the judicial roster, which is going to really reshape things. I think
he certainly is.
Did he not add six more recently?
Six more, yeah. And the Senate is plugging away even more this week. This is one of the few things in the absence of any kind of major legislation, and we'd still like them to get back to repealing Obamacare. But in the absence of doing that, they are at least keeping busy with the president's judicial nominees. And unlike the executive branch nominees, which are also important, the judicial nominees come with a lifetime appointment. So it's not that they're going anywhere when the next president comes in. They'll be there sometimes for 30 years or longer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're focusing right now on the circuit courts, because the circuit courts are those courts right below the Supreme Court that actually handle, are the final decider in so many cases. The Supreme Court handles, what, just a couple hundred cases every year. These circuit courts across the country handle thousands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So these judges will have a tremendous impact for years and years to come.
Yeah. Rob, I've got about a minute left. Talk about prison reform. What's going on in that category?
Yeah, so there's been some activity. Some activity in Congress and some more this week. It's one of those areas where it seems there might actually be some bipartisan compromise. The biggest hurdle, Bill, it seems that the Republicans and the Democrats in the House have agreed on a plan to bring about prison reform and make some changes that will take some of the lower level offenses and get people out of prison for crimes that, you know, probably don't warrant the length of the sentences that there have been. But right now it's one of those things where you need to get the Senate and the House and the president all on the same page. And Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, has been championing this issue, and it's one of those things that I think you could actually have a bipartisan victory in 2018 right before an election. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, no kidding. Rob, as always, you're such a great guest, and you explained the Jerusalem story so well. You are getting that complimentary coffee gift card. You'll be looking for it in your email box soon.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you have a great day, Bill.
All right, Rob, thanks so much. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. It is half past the hour. We'll take a little break for news. When we come back, Carolyn Custis James will be with us. Well, I had a chance to talk to her about the Book of Ruth, and we continued that conversation. I want you to hear more of that in just a minute. Be back in about 8 minutes. It's 25 minutes till the top of the hour. Perhaps you feel like you're just surviving in life and not thriving. Jesus encouraged his followers to be of good cheer, like we talked about this morning. So when you're facing the trouble of this world, Owen Strand says more about this in his book, Risky Gospel.
Jesus says something that is really challenging for me, actually, and probably for many other people out there. Be of good cheer. Be of good cheer in the midst of a fallen world. Not because we escape, you know, to the desert, to the high plains, or something like this. Not because when we become a Christian, God magically makes all of our fears and pains and struggles go away. That doesn't happen. But because God is with us, God is present beside us. That is what Jesus promises us in this fallen world, that he'll never leave us or forsake us, even as tribulation hits all around us and even in the center of our lives. Tremendous encouragement to me. Be of good cheer no matter what's going on.
If you want to hear that full interview from Owen Strand, he's a professor and author, head over to myfaithradio.com. Check it out. We'll take a short break and then be back in just a minute.
Do you know that 85% of the people who come to find Jesus will find him before they're age 18? This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. Deuteronomy 4:9 reminds us, only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to your children after them. Spend time telling the stories of God's greatness. Invest in them through the telling of how good our God is. Psalm 87:2 says, I will utter things from old, things our ancestors have told us. Tell your children, your grandchildren, the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, of his power and wonder he has done. It's what being a parent is all about. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to the show. It wasn't that long ago I had a chance to have a lively conversation with Carolyn Custis James. She's written a book called Finding God in the Margins, written on the Book of Ruth. And she's joining us back in the program. I said I had a lot of questions still yet to ask, and she's here, said I'll take all of them. Welcome back to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you very much.
Well, and one of the things I want to talk about is that in both Job and Ruth, God responds in such a powerful way. But they don't necessarily understand the reasons for their pain or their losses. And I think that's that's what a lot of Christians feel today. They see that narrative in their own life. I've got these pain, this pain and these losses, and God doesn't really, he's not really explaining it to me, and I don't like it.
Yeah, and I don't, and I'm not even convinced that when we see him, he's going to say, "Oh, here's why." You know, I don't. You know, I mean, I think this is what faith is all about, and you know what he does in both stories is affirm who he is, and in you know in Job's story, he actually speaks, but in the book of Ruth, he speaks through Ruth. And it gets through pretty quickly to Naomi. You know, when she's on the road from Moab to Bethlehem, and she's trying to send her daughters-in-law back because she knows nothing good is waiting for them in Bethlehem. You know, they're just totally vulnerable, and they'll be immigrants to boot, so it'll just be even worse. And there she is, you know, feeling forsaken and abandoned and that God has turned against her, and she's being held with Ruth's arms around her, and Ruth is saying fierce words of covenant love in her mother's ears. Stop asking me to leave you. I will never leave you. Mm-hmm. And when Ruth goes out to glean, you know, gleaning is like you're lucky if you bring home a handful. Ruth gets out there, and she doesn't want to take home scraps to her mother-in-law. And so what she's asking, she's not asking, is it okay for me to glean? It's obviously okay. She's asking to glean where the grain has just been cut down. She doesn't want to wait for the harvesters to clear the field for Boaz and then pick up whatever's left. She wants to feed her mother-in-law. And he gets what she's doing, and he gives her permission to glean where there's a lot of grain. He tells his workers to put more in her path. When it's time, when she needs water, he says, go drink the water that my men have drawn. And he feeds her lunch and gives her more than she can eat. And when she goes home to her mother-in-law, she is bringing 29 pounds of winnowed barley.
Wow.
According to ancient Babylonian records, it would take a male harvester a half month to a full month to bring home that much in pay.
Oh, that's just remarkable.
It's a mother load. It's the mother load.
Yes.
And when Naomi sees that, this mundane load of grain, that's when she says God has not forgotten. And the Hebrew word is chesed. It's the stubborn, voluntary, costly, sacrificial love of God where he pursues his people with it. And she says he has not forgotten his chesed for the living and the dead. And that's the turning point for Naomi.
Why does this make me choke up?
You know, and for Ruth, I love to say, you know, in our current culture where there's a lot of talk about equal pay for equal work, Boaz goes well above that for Ruth. So there he is again, you know, casts a bad light on Boaz to think that he, as the owner, the wealthy, powerful owner of the field, is looking at a scavenger with romantic intentions.
Yeah. That's,
you know, it's abuse of power, and he's an older man. He's introduced into the story as a man who needs no improvement. He's a man hayal, a man of valor, and he wouldn't be that. He's, you know, scholars are in agreement that he's of Naomi's generation, so he's an older man. He would not be a man of honor if he hadn't gotten married and been about the business of producing sons for his family. He would be, you know, he would be a shameful, no good son. And, you know, we don't know if he was a widow or if he was married or, but, you know, it's a polygamous culture, and none of the first readers of this story would care. You know, we would, but you know, he's acting sacrificially every time. I mean, he's just come out of a prolonged famine and is in famine recovery, you know, working to make Bethlehem great again. And instead he's, you know, doling it out to this poor woman. So,
That's Carolyn Custis James. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with her and her book on the Book of Ruth. Be back in a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour. Let's resume my conversation with Carolyn Custis James on the Book of Ruth. Carolyn, when I think of the story, it's, you know, I think part of traditions, they live hard and they die hard, but the typical narrative seems to include this sweepingly romantic episode with Boaz. There is a part where Naomi says to Ruth, you know, take off your mourning clothes and put on your pretty stuff and head out. So what elements of romanticism can we have in this story?
What you find in Boaz is that he admires Ruth for real reasons. He doesn't admire her because she's, you know, going to give him good connections because of her family connections. She has no connections, you know, and she's not, you know, a promising bride in terms of, you know, the possibility of producing sons for him.
Mm-hmm.
So she only brings deficiencies to the relationship. But what you find every time he encounters her is that he esteems her for her character, for the choices that she's making, for the sacrifices and risks she's taking for Naomi. And, you know, the laws that get appealed to at the threshing floor, they're mixed in their purposes, because when Naomi talks about sending Ruth to Boaz, she says, you know, she's seeking rest for her. She's not seeking a child. It would be the height of cruelty for Naomi to reopen that painful chapter again. What she's thinking about is that Ruth will outlive her and be stranded in the Bethlehem culture, and she's looking for shelter. She wants her to come under the security of a male umbrella. And because Boaz has been gracious to her in the past, she's hoping that he will show mercy. So it's an appeal for mercy. But when Ruth gets to Boaz, she throws out Naomi's script and throws Mosaic law at him. She's throwing the Levirate law and the kinsman redeemer law.
Mm-hmm.
And the Levirate law says that when a man dies without a male heir, his blood brother is supposed to marry the widow, and the son born to that union will take the dead man's place on the family tree. And so it's a call to sacrifice, because if your brother dies without a male heir, your inheritance just multiplied. Mm-hmm. And if you produce a male to take his place, your inheritance will shrink again. It's a call to sacrifice. It's the gospel. It's a call to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And the kinsman redeemer is the nearest relative who, when his relative falls on hard times and is forced to sell his land, the nearer relative is to purchase the land and keep it producing. And in the year of Jubilee, the land will revert back to the original owner. So that is a call to sacrifice. And Boaz is not the nearest relative, and he's not the blood brother, but he's willing to make the sacrifices to help rescue Naomi's family. So it's, you know, it's not, they're not thinking like eHarmony or, you know, they're not thinking in those terms. They're thinking in the cultural terms, the Mosaic law, that's a call to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And really, there are all kinds of legal loopholes here for Boaz, you know, that he could just say, you know, you've got to be kidding. You know, nobody alive is responsible for either of these. And, you know, that land is just going to sit until the nearest relative just inherits it by default.
Mm-hmm.
But he's stepping up. The nearer kinsman redeemer says, if I do this, it will ruin me. And it means his own sons will inherit less. And
yeah.
Boaz, you know, so he's, yeah, it's the gospel. You know, the gospel is, Naomi is giving up Ruth for Ruth's good, and Ruth is all she has. And Ruth is risking all kinds of things to volunteer to bear a son to rescue the family, and Boaz is going to make it happen, mm-hmm. even at enormous cost to himself. And I mean, I find it's what we see in the book of Ruth is a whole new way of being human that Jesus' gospel and his kingdom reflect. And it goes against the grain of everything. And, you know, in our American way of thinking, when we come to a story in the Bible that's got a man and a woman in it, it's either about romance or it's about the war of the sexes. And we can't see that God is doing amazing things in the relationships with his sons and daughters to advance his kingdom for the world. You know, it's just very powerful.
Yeah. Carolyn, it's I see God doing such radical things in the book of Ruth. I mean, just in that patriarchal society, for starters, God's showing us that men and women are equals.
Yeah, and that they need each other. Because, you know, Ruth can't do what she's asking to do if Boaz doesn't throw his weight behind her. And Boaz becomes a better man because of her. You know, so it's not, you know, for me, it's equality doesn't even take us far enough, you know, because really what it's teaching is that men and women need each other, and that God, from the beginning, his game plan was that his male and female image bearers would serve him together, and the fall has just broken us apart and you know, in horrible ways. And this book totally changed my life. I mean, for me to see Ruth taking the initiative and Boaz responding to her like he does, I mean, he just throws his full weight behind what she's requesting.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw Ruth in that light, I have to tell you, I bawled my eyes out. I just thought, you know, I've never seen myself as having that kind of responsibility. You know, because women, we're so often taught that, you know, we're to submit and we're to follow and we're not to initiate. And yet you have this young woman with absolutely every strike against her who is leading the cause to provide for Naomi and to rescue the family. And, you know, for me, it was over right there. I just thought, you know, when I see Jesus, I'd rather be explaining to him why I did too much than why I did too little. And, you know, that it just, to me, it's a call to all of us to step up,
mm-hmm.
to pay attention to what's going on around us, to make sacrifices for one another. It's radical, and we've turned it into a sappy romance.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn, I just have a couple of minutes left, and I'm interested because the book of Ruth is about God, so maybe you can tell us how this story of Ruth paves the way for Christ.
Yeah. Well, it does because one of the things that we find is that God redeems our struggles. And Naomi loses everything in the beginning, and she wrestles with God, with his love. Does he love me? And she can point to nothing in herself or her story or how the culture looks at her that would give God reason to love or care about her. And he reaffirms his care for her in the most radical ways through the actions of Ruth and Boaz. And in the end, she's holding this little boy. And the women say, Naomi has a son. Ruth gives her baby to Naomi. And Naomi raises that little boy on the theology she learned in the school of suffering. And it's so amazing because we find Naomi's theology in her descendants, because Obed teaches it to his son Jesse, and Jesse teaches it to his son David, and David teaches it to us when he writes, surely goodness and hesed will follow me all the days of my life. So, you know, God is at work in Naomi. She is not being discarded. She's being mobilized for his purposes. And she becomes, you know, a theologian that the church learns from, if we just can stop throwing her aside in the opening verses of the book.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, just I appreciate the in-depth analysis you've done, the study, the way your heart's been broken and rejuvenated by this story. It's just a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for writing the book. And you've been a delightful guest, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, I have five more, so I'd be glad to come back.
Oh, I'd love to have you back. You just got yourself signed up for at least five more interviews.
Okay, great.
All right, Carolyn. Carolyn Custis James has been my guest. She's author and speaker and written a book called Finding God in the Margins, The Book of Ruth. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
If you turn the volume up, you might be able to use the carpool lane. See, it pays to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Thank you to Carolyn Custis James, a lively interview on the Book of Ruth. And to Rob Bluey, always a pleasure to talk to Rob. Hour one is now getting ready for the history books. As you think about praying for the unreached, think of the Somalia, probably known as Africa's most failed nation. They've become a haven for Islamic radicalism and terrorism. So if you're a Somali living there and you want to convert to Christianity, most likely it will cost you your life. So we need to pray for the people in Somalia today. And if you want to get involved in PrayerCast, they give you a country to pray for every day. So there's 1.8 billion Muslims that we would love to have experience the love of Jesus Christ. So might want to consider signing up for that. PrayerCast, just Google it. You'll find it. And today we're praying for Somalia. So we've got a great second hour coming up. Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association is going to join us. And then my pal Jeff Redorn is going to be with us in the second hour as well. So we'll take a little break, and then when we come back, hour two is just ahead. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.